Monday, October 15th, 2018. It's LA Podcast. Hayes Davenport, Alyssa Walker, Scott Frazier. I'm so excited to talk about the Beverly Hills Walkout. I feel like the show was created to talk about this story.
We are off and running.
I mean, I guess we have to tell LA stories. I'll rush through one.
How could you get a more LA story than a Beverly Hills subway walkout?
I know. I wish I could have gone. I'm so mad that none of us could go today. Anyway, let's tell our LA stories from this week.
I'll go.
Great.
I gave a tour of downtown LA to a group of Woodbury University architecture students. They were amazing. They asked really good questions. They asked about like gentrification and transportation, and we peeked over. You can like stand on the top of Disney Hall and like look down into the guts of the regional connector being built. It's like a scar. It's like open, like a wound where they're like doing the surgery. And we got to walk down Spring Street and talk about bike infrastructure because the new Spring Street bike lanes opened this week.
Protected bike lanes.
Protected by cars, which are parking, supposed to park, you know, with enough space for an extra wide bike lane, actually. What's really cool about it. So we talked about Figueroa's bike lane, which is protected by bollards that you could very easily just drive over or remove later. Yeah,
it looks almost fun to
like weave in and out of
them with your car.
But the Spring and then Main will also have these downtown look really good. They're shaded, they're wide. All the cars were behaving the time that we walked down it, and we saw people using the bike share and riding their bikes down it. It was a very exciting and one wonderful moment.
That's cool.
The future is coming slowly.
I'll point out, because I pointed out last time that all of Scott's LA stories are just things that he was thinking about, and all of your stories are like nice honors that you were asked to do. You were asked to give a tour or speak on a panel or go to a conference. I have no stories like that. My stories, I guess, do sometimes make me look good and like a good guy. And this week is no different. I went to Homeless Connect Day.
Oh well, that is good.
That was awesome.
That's better than being asked to lead a tour.
It was fantastic. This is a day people should look up when these are. If there's one in your neighborhood, the county I think runs them. It's where they get all the service organizations to basically be in one place. In this case, it was the Friendship Auditorium on Riverside Drive, and they invite all the people in the community who don't have homes, and they service provide like crazy all day long. People get showers. Lava May was there. They were great. This one guy who I know from Echo Park had been trying to get his out-of-state birth certificate for like years and years, and this guy from PATH, who was so great, figured it out for him. He ran into this problem where he needed an ID to get his birth certificate, which is the thing that he wants his birth certificate for. So anyone else would have just given up at that point. But this guy punched through the system and got this guy his ID. It was crazy. I saw stories like that all day long. It was great. Scott, what were you thinking about this week?
I can tell a story of something that actually happened to me this week that will, I think, stand on its own as evidence of why most of mine are thought experiments, because normally what happens to me in the span of a week is I make a bunch of plans to do things, flake on doing those things, and then end of week. So this week, the rarest of all things happened for me, and I feel like this is somewhat of a relatable LA thing, which is that I actually successfully managed to meet up with two separate groups of my friends back to back, people that live nowhere near me. Well, some of them live in K-Town, some of them live as far away as like Montebello, like people that I just typically don't expect to see because I try to coordinate things, shit happens and it doesn't work out. Sorry to Alyssa's daughter, Avery.
Yeah, who now listens to this show.
She's her first podcast, and now I can't let her listen to it anymore.
Yeah, so I just had this, I don't know if the stars aligned last Sunday, and I managed to go for a hike with a group of my friends, had a really good time in Griffith, and then go out to eat with a different group of friends, and it felt good. It was like, wow, I wish that I could do this more often. I wish I could coordinate this, but then
what's stopping you? the like the size of the city, the traffic.
Hard to take transit in between.
Yeah. Well, especially like one to the other, it's kind of like you don't really want to. And then just like if I actually can manage to get if I can manage to get a handful of people in a room together, then I tend to want to just like, you know, stay there and not make other plans for afterwards. So this is a rare occasion where it worked out, and it was so physically draining that I was
you
like
spent the rest of the week.
I was pinned to the couch for the next several days, but looking forward to next year when that happens again.
Okay, here we go. Beverly Hills Walkout.
We have a new segment that we want to introduce.
Oh, that's right. So this is going to be part of a repeated segment, I'm sure, that we do. Alyssa came up with the name of it.
I think this is the name of it, but you could do like, can we have like a sound edited in later that's just like the beginning of the 90210 theme?
Yes.
Dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun.
I promise.
Is that the Super Mario?
Okay, so
no, it's the beginning of 90210.
So we'll hear that right now.
And then you want to say, it's Beverly Hills, 902, oh no.
So that is it. That is our new segment.
This is Beverly Hills, 902, oh no. The story is Beverly Hills students staged a walkout.
That's, there's two students, asterisks in that.
Yeah, students has 500 quotes around it.
And walkout is like crossed out. And then there's like, you know.
So what actually happened? Why are they so mad?
They're upset because Metro wants to build the Purple Line extension under Beverly Hills High School. This has been a fight that they've been waging in Beverly Hills for a very long time. They claim the construction of the Purple Line is going to release methane deposits, and it's going to run into these abandoned oil wells under Beverly Hills High and blow up all the children.
They have actually released a commercial, I think, a couple of years ago that graphically depicted what it would look like if everyone at Beverly Hills High School combusted.
And this is kind of a familiar strategy. Actually, when they were first talking about extending the Purple Line in the 90s, there was a gas explosion at the Robinson's May department store right on Wilshire and Fairfax, and neighborhood groups used that to scare the neighborhood into thinking that the Purple Line, the streets would just be blowing up constantly, even though it was totally unrelated. And great environmental champion Henry Waxman got behind them in this effort, and that's why we are now having this fight 25 years later, because it was not built at the time. Anyway, Alyssa, talk about the shape that this walkout took and why it wasn't really a walkout.
So we have two stories up on Curbed that, I mean, one was like, oh, this is happening. And the other one, it was just basically writing itself as the day went on. Well, let me back up. There was a website that appeared. You know, this has been fought for years. People have been talking about, you know, why they don't want it. People in Beverly Hills don't want the subway. For various reasons, but I think they kind of got behind this one specific environmental threat, I guess, which is now called the Purple Threat, this website that popped up, which problematic, and we'll can talk about that later. Everybody said nobody knew who was behind it. No one was behind it. And it made a very specific ask of the Trump administration to withhold funding for the Purple Line, which is something we've talked about on the show before, that this was actually a threat. I don't know if it was a purple threat, but the Department of Transportation was kind of being slow to send over some of the funds or say that they were going to for certain transit projects across the country. Apparently, Metro always maintained that the money was fine. There was no problems. It was always coming. A few weeks ago, the official designation came down that it was coming. And now the big ask from the purple threat is a personal plea to Elaine Chao, who is the Department of Transportation head, and also President Trump
McCarthy, who Trump is in love with and does not represent this district,
to take the money back, like save our school and take the money back. So this is the very specific ask from this website. Then it comes out that the website actually was put together by the president of the Beverly Hills school board.
Lisa Korbatov.
And she has an interesting history, which is also connected to real estate. Her parents' house in 2008, it's in Beverly Hills, around the corner from where this walkout was staged, was sold in a very strange transaction and then quickly transferred for no money to an LLC that was later determined to be part of the Trump organization.
It was sold to, I believe, an Egyptian scam artist.
Yeah, there was some guy in the middle
who gave it to this Trump LLC for $0.
And later said, like, my name was listed erroneously on this real estate deal.
Her husband, Lisa Korbatov's husband, Igor Korbatov, said, there's such a thing as human error, which is the reason why this house was deeded to the wrong person.
And Michael Cohen, his attorney, who is now being investigated, you know, for other multiple things, was on the deed as well. So
his attorney at the time.
Yeah, his attorney at the time.
Yeah, you might remember this house being in the news because it was like widely speculated that Donald Trump was going to stay there when he came into town, and possibly that was going to be the site of protests and things like that before he ended up staying at the Wilshire Grand downtown.
Yes. So and the walkout originally was going to be to this house. They had
a trek to his house and just like drop to their knees on the lawn, or
I mean, it's close enough. It's really close, like where they decided to go. There's no real shortage of parks in Beverly Hills, but maybe this was just, it was supposed to be just close enough. I'm just wondering about the location, because it was really interesting that the walkout wasn't about, you know, walking out of school, which is usually what you do during a walkout. People were bused. The students were bused. They walked out of their school onto school buses, and the buses took them to this park. So in some distances, it was, you know, in some cases it was like, you know, a mile and a half, a mile 0.7. There's several different schools in the Beverly Hills area, but all the students were bused, as young as, you know, elementary school students were taken to this protest.
5-year-olds.
So it was basically a school sanctioned no school day where
there were buses, there were tents set up that
quasi
were paid
Trump
for
rally,
there were porta potties, like this was like a fully funded operation, but it was framed as a student led walkout, and the student that led it was a kid named Sean Tooby, who I saw referred to as a like student body president, but what he actually is the student representative on the school board, who I believe I've spent like 2 hours and I trying to figure out how the student body representative on the Beverly Hills School Board is picked, and I couldn't figure it out, but my best guess is that it is chosen by the other members of the school board, the president of which is this woman, Lisa Korbatov. So I think one could reasonably speculate that the person
she's in the pocket,
yes, that she has some influence over this. I don't want to take away this child's agency. But they were very insistent that this was a student-run operation that they just decided to allocate all these buses and porta-potties for and stuff. They went to Will Rogers Memorial Park. That's the place where the protest ended up. Site of George Michael's arrest for a lewd act in the late 90s, I think. Clearly an intentional reference to the lewd act that Metro is committing on the people of Beverly Hills. It's also fitting because Will Rogers was one of the celebrities. The reason there's a Will Rogers Memorial Park in Beverly Hills is because he was one of the celebrities that fought Beverly Hills being annexed by Los Angeles in the 20s when the city had...
Do you think they thought about that?
Yes, I'm sure this is all very intentional.
Definitely.
When the city had no water in the 20s, and like he and Douglas Fairbanks and Mary Pickford and Rudolph Valentino nobly fought to not have the city annexed by Los Angeles. There's a monument to their heroism of building a wall around Beverly Hills. It looks like a war memorial on... have you seen it? It's on the Olympic, and it's ridiculous. Anyway, so, how many people were at this thing?
Well, the estimates were over 1,000. And I don't know if those were confirmed by, you know, police give their estimates. It's really tough to count crowds, but I think the organizers and police and then people who were there all agreed it was definitely over 1,000 people.
That's a ton of people.
Students
a huge
and
number.
Parents. You know, it wasn't just like all kids, and it was definitely a lot of adults and a lot of teachers, which a lot of the teachers gave comments about how they were using this day as, you know, this learning experience, and they had curriculum planned. And one of the teachers of an elementary school said that they were going to be teaching the kids about Rosa Parks that day.
Yes, that they were going to learn something about Rosa Parks, I think, by fighting
participating.
By limiting public transportation options. That yes. is definitely in line with
well, the, what Rosa
the person who said that, I think it was the principal of El Rodeo
yes.
Elementary. The unearned victimhood really, I mean, it jives well with the general pro-Trump sentiment of the walkout. And I mean, also the like just beseeching nature of Trump to personally come in and stop
yeah.
this project.
There were a lot of Trump banners
that
kids were carrying.
Kids saying that they supported Trump and they believed that, you know, many students in the district did.
Even the guy that edits the Beverly Hills High School newspaper was kind of defending the walkout as not being racist, but even he said that the Trump support there was, quote, overwhelming.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes sense because Beverly Hills is, compared to the rest of LA, much more Trump leaning, and there are entire precincts that went for Trump.
You got a lot of single issue subway voters in there. Yeah. So,
and it will probably work. I mean, just like waving the banner around, you know, if you want to get his attention.
But I want to talk a little bit about how this would work. So Metro has decided and actually has begun construction of the Purple Line extension that's going from Koreatown all the way out to Westwood. That's being built in three phases. They've received for the first two phases full funding grant agreements from the federal government. That means all of the environmental documents have been completed. The federal government has determined this is how much Metro and local governments are expected to pay. This is how much the federal government is going to kick in to complete the project. And they've been working on this for years now. The first phase of this from K-Town to the very edge of Beverly Hills at La Cienega is almost halfway complete. That's expected to be completed in 2023. The second phase is the one that goes through Beverly Hills mm-hmm. to Century City. And Garcetti and other Metro officials were extremely happy because they locked down the full funding grant agreement for that before Obama left office. So that was one of the last things that they were able to lock down from Obama. But this full funding grant agreement is something that Metro officials have in the past referred to as being quote unquote bulletproof. Mm-hmm. This is a signed contract saying that they're going to get X amount of money. What we were talking about in previous episodes of this show was that the Trump administration was not funding the Westwood brand or the Westwood section. Which goes out to the VA. It has a stop adjacent to UCLA's campus and one at the VA. But the second phase, which is entirely consisting of the portion that Beverly Hills and the high school there have an issue with, has been set in stone for 2 years at this point. So it would be unprecedented for the federal administration to attempt to claw back that money now.
That makes me think it will happen.
I mean, Trump has said before that he does things specifically because he's heard that other presidents wouldn't be man enough to do it or whatever. So it's entirely possible. But what is that? Where would that leave us? We're not really sure because we do have a ton of money for this project already. It's not really clear to me that they've tried to stop this in court multiple times and been shut down by essentially every judge in the Metro LA area.
Right. And I think it's important to note that like Metro has studied it, and Metro, to its credit, today on Twitter had this amazing tweet that was like, okay, here are some facts about the Purple Line with every single environmental study they've done, and they commented to us and other outlets that yes, well, whatever they want to do, we'll continue to study it. Like, you know, we are very confident that we've done all we can. But then the people who were protesting were saying, we just want to have a conversation about moving it so it doesn't go below the school. They just keep saying this, right? So what is that look like? Like, why does it have to go underneath the school? Let's explain that.
Yeah. So basically Metro, when they were originally studying this extension about 10 years ago, they looked at a number of different routes that they could take from essentially the Beverly and Rodeo stop to Century City, following Wilshire out to Century City takes longer, and therefore costs more. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, once they had just a handful of alternatives left, and Beverly Hills was strongly pushing for them to take a route on Santa Monica that would go out of the way of the main part of Century City where all the jobs are, they found that there was a massive complex of faults there. Mm-hmm. It was a very complex fault zone. So the Santa Monica route was ruled out, and they have to go under Beverly Hills is the most under Beverly Hills High is the most direct route from Rodeo to Century City.
And Beverly Hills High is right on the Century City border.
It's right there. Yeah.
It's pretty close to this stop.
And so, like, here's my big question. So we know there are oil wells. Like, if you go to Beverly Hills High School, like,
so they make it seem all the Stop the Purple Threat website talks about these abandoned oil wells, makes it sound like they were drilling there in like the 1800s or something. The wells were decommissioned 2 years ago.
I mean,
something I think that's important to mention about the Beverly Hills is concern for student safety. They have been drilling for oil underneath the school for 80 years, and in fact, fought tooth and nail some of the people, including former mayor John Mearish, known Beverly Hills scamp, hates housing, hates this Purple Line route, has fought all these things extensively and fought to keep the oil wells under Beverly Hills High because they make the city so much money.
I also love the Purple Threat moniker because John Mearish loves calling everything communism, regardless of what it is. He called SB 827, which was, but most people were content to call that a massive deregulation and trickle down
hyper capitalist. Yeah, hand
John out. Mearish called that the worst of communism. So, yeah, shout out to him.
I'm sure he listens to this segment. So wouldn't the real solution be to get rid of the oil wells, like not to worry about the tunneling part per se, but if they really wanted to eradicate the danger to the students, to spend all this money cleaning up the oil wells, which many other communities in the LA area are doing. And many economically disadvantaged communities that don't have enough money to do it. So why aren't they doing that is my first question. So doesn't that seem like it's a bit disingenuous? And then if they succeeded in saying like, okay, we don't want a stop. I mean, are they, what do they want out of this? For them to move it? Do they want like, don't come near us? Is this really what they want?
That's basically it. And essentially, I think the hope is once you parse all of the disingenuity around all of this, the hope is that they will have to do enough of an environmental study all over again that it will kill or seriously delay the project.
This is, the cost would be so much higher.
This is a project that originally started in the early 80s, so it's not beyond the reach of imagination to say that if you push hard enough, you can stop it for the rest of your lifetime.
Like we were saying, doing this exact thing worked before. It got it stopped before.
So there is one good thing coming up, which is apparently the election on November 6th. None of these people are running again for the school board.
Okay.
Is this their last hurrah? Like they're just, just giving it all day.
Have you accounted for human error though?
Something else that I think is relevant. Wait, then that vote is on November 6th?
Yeah, I mean,
That's not going to be part of our LA podcast voter guide, which comes out this week.
Apparently, we're not
going
to go into detail, but if you are, you know, a Beverly Hills person, you should go check it out and figure out who to vote for, I guess.
Something else I think is relevant about Beverly Hills' concern for student safety, this very school board in 2015 voted not to replace 14 buildings on their campus that were named at imminent risk of collapse in an earthquake, not even a big earthquake, as small as a 3.5. And they had money for this purpose allocated by a bond measure that the people of Beverly Hills voted on to retrofit these buildings so they would be safe in the case of an earthquake. And instead, what they decided to do was shut down the auditorium at Beverly Hills High because the ceiling was about to fall in. Wow. and not do the work on these buildings.
Some of this money, where is all this money coming from? I mean, years and years and years, right, of spending this money to fight this instead of repair the roof of the auditorium, maybe? I mean, I don't...
Big trouble on Little Santa Monica. that's my other one.
Crazy week. There's so much other stuff this week that was wild. There was a typhus outbreak in L.A. A lot of people were talking about this. I will say that initially when I read this story, it sounded more extreme than further reading led it to be. I guess a typhus outbreak is very rare. Typhus is a disease harbored by rats and animals. It's usually the result of overcrowding and poor
sanitation.
Yeah, sanitation in cities. This outbreak, I think, was limited to the low double digits of people, somewhere between like 10 or 20 people, which again, I guess is a lot. It's a disease that causes fever. I don't think anyone's died from it, correct?
I mean, it just sounds really
sounds
bad.
Terrible. It sounds really, really bad.
So it sounds like there were multiple outbreaks, right? That were more
a couple
or less
different outbreaks, and they're expecting
discreet
more
from each other. Yes. One was in Pasadena, yep, where I think they had 15 to 20 identified cases. The other one was in downtown Los Angeles, where there were fewer. Mm-hmm. I want to say about 10 identified cases so far. But yeah, I mean, it does sound, I think that this is just when it comes down to it, this is a story about our continuing homelessness crisis. If you look at the reporting on this, the city of Los Angeles has put together an action plan that says we have a typhus zone, and that zone is 3rd to 7th Spring to Alameda, otherwise known as Skid Row. Mm-hmm. And that is where this outbreak has happened, because there is a serious likelihood that as a human being living in Skid Row, you are going to come into contact with an animal carrying fleas, carrying typhus. Mm-hmm.
And is the thinking
right now
that it got from Skid Row and it was carried to Pasadena somehow? Because it's not conducted by human to human
at all. No, I'm not entirely sure that they've connected the two outbreaks at all at this point. I know that they were saying that the animals that had the fleas on them in Pasadena, they mentioned like possums and things like that. And in downtown Los Angeles, they were talking about rats, but they didn't want to emphasize specific animals. They were just saying this is just what they're seeing at this point. I don't know that they've connected them.
Okay. And the result of that is they're talking about increasing sweeps. Another thing that came out this week was Mayor Garcetti and the city basically declared their policy that once all these shelters are up and running,
the Bridge Home.
Well, yeah, once the Bridge Home program is running, they are going to be instituting a lot more sweeps in the surrounding areas. I think they're already starting to do it around.
I saw it in downtown for sure. Yeah,
around El Pueblo, yes, and Olvera Street.
I saw a big difference from when I had been down there a few weeks ago and when I was down there this week, actually during a big like a union protest, telling Mayor Garcetti to fix LA. I like walked through this big protest that was happening in this wide area of downtown, but you saw people out talking to a lot more people, residents in the area, and then the sidewalks were much clearer than they had been in recent weeks, so they must be doing this enforcement for better or for worse, probably for worse.
What I'd like to know is, are there open beds in the El Pueblo complex? There aren't a lot of beds in that facility.
Not very big. Yeah, I don't know how that works, but the people are in who are staying there,
right?
And I don't know how the process works of who gets to stay there.
It makes me feel like in Silver Lake we were advocating to get like a bridge home facility in our area. There's already one in District 13 in Mitchell Farrell's district in Hollywood. So I know the response is going to be like, well, we did this already.
Yeah.
Like,
so you've had this experience with Mitch already.
Yeah. So send them to Hollywood. But we were saying it would be great to go in Silver Lake too. Echo Park, there's a pretty large population of people who are homeless here. And now it makes me think, if the cost is people that don't want to go into this facility being uprooted from the neighborhood that the odds are they come from, I don't want it. I'd rather not have, you know, it's not for me to decide, but my instinct would be that it's less devastating to the community of people that are homeless to not get this shelter if it means most of them are just going to be cleaned out.
Yeah, I think it's this specific issue keeps getting just more and more naughty, I feel like, as time...
K-N-O-T-T-Y.
Yeah, knotted.
Not N-A-U-G-H-T-Y.
But as time goes on, it just feels like it is becoming more and more difficult to come to a point of resolution because, I mean, we've talked about on this show... hepatitis cases. Obviously, the huge hepatitis A outbreak was in San Diego, but there were some cases of that among the homeless population here. Now there's typhus. We had people on who've talked about the critical shortage of public restroom facilities on Skid Row. At the same time, we have a lot of forces that are pushing back against what I would say are like the most compassionate responses to our homelessness crisis. We're seeing a major backlash from specific neighborhood activists, from city boosters towards tolerance of the presence of homeless individuals in specific spaces. And it's really, I think, it's really unfortunate. I can't see a way in which things are getting better for the people who are homeless in Los Angeles at this moment. I don't know about you guys.
Especially when every like supposed gift to that community comes at this massive cost.
Yeah.
There always has to be a stick that comes with it.
Right. And so we have an extreme just inhumane situation in downtown Los Angeles where there need to be better public facilities, public sanitation needs to be better. But we don't seem to be getting any sort of offers of doing that, like you said, Hayes, without also a threat of reprisal. We've heard, I think, in the past week or so that there are activists in the downtown area who are trying to get the city to actually fight out in court for their right to start seizing the belongings of the homeless again.
Yep.
And it's just kind of like, you know, why can't we just provide a more sanitary environment so that we stop having disease outbreaks every couple months?
Yep. More huge news. This is a third ranking story from this week. Right. A council member resigns in the middle of his term. Mitchell Englander, District 12, whose district is like, is that the farthest north district?
You're going all the way up to the left.
The sole Republican on the city council, which is not like technically it's not a party position, but he is the only Republican. He announced this week that he will be serving on the city council until 2019. His term is up in 2020, but in 2019, he's going to step down to join a lobbying firm. This is something.
An investment group, right?
It's an investment group, but he's going to be the executive of like government affairs, which is like he's going to be a lobbyist.
Yeah.
He comes from a very a family of a ton of lobbyists.
The largest lobbying firm at City Hall.
Yes, Englander, Kanabe, and what is the name of that firm? Like one of the partners is related to former county supervisor Don Kanabe. Englander, I believe, is his uncle, and his cousin Adam Englander is also one of the lobbyists. So look, you go to Thanksgiving, you see your uncle
Englander, Kanabe, and Allen.
That's right. You see your uncle and your cousin in these really nice suits. And you just and think, like, what am I doing?
What am I doing just banning scooters in my district every day?
Which is another thing that happened this week. The two Mitches on the city council, Englander and O'Farrell, his district is Northeast LA, Silver Lake, Echo Park, Atwater, that area. They both unilateral ban on scooters imposed this week. Any
any dockless. Yeah. Well,
any dockless scooter.
They didn't really ban it. It just, the information came out about how to apply for permits, and it just says right there on the page, like, these areas scooters may not go, and it's that district.
That sounds like a ban.
I mean, it is, but they didn't like come out and like proclaim it. And I also would say that downtown is also banned, which is
a shadow ban.
Bizarre, yeah. But it's not the rest of his district; it's just downtown.
Yeah, and that kind of—I mean—the competition for street and sidewalk space downtown is really intense.
I think that makes a little bit of sense, but then you also have these really nice wide bike
lanes.
Now
you have these bike lanes,
so now it makes less sense.
It's true. Anyway. For fear of reprisal from scooter people, Mitch Englander lasted another
like,
2 days on the council, said,
done.
I'm bailing. He's going to join Oakview Investments.
Yeah.
What's notable about Oakview Investments?
Their commitment to the fan-first experience.
They are a sports and entertainment and, like, arena. They provide services for venues and arenas. They do design, construction, branding, security, ticketing, operations, and marketing. This is such a crazy coincidence. The Olympics are coming to L.A. Imagine when Mitch Englander looks up and is like, oh, my God, I just joined this sports lobbying firm that builds arenas. Huh. I guess I could really profit from the largest global sporting event coming to the city. And the timing is kind of perfect when you really think about it.
Why does he have to leave so fast, though? Like, why doesn't he want to finish his term? Because he's got to get that sports money or, like,
the
money.
Moolah.
I would never presume to think that this has anything to do with money.
Would he be up? Did he just go in the last election, or was he? I believe he was just reelected.
He was reelected, yeah.
Yes.
It would have been an extra long term. He could have, like, I don't know.
This is, by the way,
that was the thing. It was just dragging on and on.
Yeah, he was just like, all right.
An extra $180K a year. Who needs it?
This is something that LA just dealt with a couple years ago when Felipe Fuentes in District 7 announced that he was leaving the city council in, I think, like, tomorrow. I think he was.
He had to leave right away.
Yes.
Yeah.
He also became a lobbyist. And that seat sat open, you know, represents only like 400,000 people, had no city council representative for months.
Yeah, Herb Wesson said, don't worry, guys, I've got you. I can handle double duty.
Nowhere near his district. So I don't know what happens in this case, if there's a special or what. I guess the precedent is that they're just going to leave it for a year.
Yeah, which I don't know. That just seems like extremely unacceptable, and I wonder if that will be the case considering Englander's district is so wealthy. I wonder if they'll actually just allow that to sit open for a year, if they will push for a special election.
Yep.
I'm not entirely sure, but this does seem pretty strange to me because you have what by all appearances is one of the cushiest elected jobs in the country. Extremely high paying. You have a ton of unchecked power.
You're almost guaranteed to be reelected with zero effort.
You just sit there and cash checks and pocket veto homeless housing. Like,
not anymore.
Like, tomorrow's never going
to
come.
That's why he left. He didn't get to pocket veto homeless housing anymore. Thanks to Jerry Brown.
Yeah.
This is just like, I mean, the incentive now, you know, like to run up the bill on the Olympics for the city, he's now playing for the other team.
That's true.
Like, it is like, it's totally grotesque. It's such an overt cash grab. Mayor Garcetti in his statement talked about how Englander is this like devout public servant. And like so passionate about the community. That's what abandoning your district to be fully unrepresented for a year gets you from the mayor, as you're a devout public servant. So my message to Mitch Englander is don't let it hit you where he splits you, pal. Get out of here. Good riddance.
You like sports so much, take a lap. That's Hayes's message to you.
But it does present a very good opportunity to get another woman on city council.
Absolutely.
We only have 2 out of 15.
They could have like a contiguous
kind of like
block.
A valley. Yeah, I could have like a, the valley. Women's valley. but I saw, you know, council member Nuri Martinez, who's also her district is adjacent, right? Yeah.
Yep.
She has been doing a big push to try to get more women into elected positions in LA. So let's do it, people of the Valley, of the Northwestern.
Porter Ranchers.
Porter Ranchers.
Oh, yeah.
Stepping Porter up. Rancheros.
Yeah.
Northridge,
and don't worry, this is a totally safe district. It's not like they had they're totally fine on their own. It's not like they had the largest natural gas leak in American history last year.
That'll be fixed. Also, you don't have to be Republican, maybe, to win this.
Yeah, I mean, that is interesting.
Yeah.
What happens when there's no longer an incumbent running, obviously.
Yeah, that's an interesting point because the most hotly contested congressional election in the LA area is Katie Hill versus Steve Knight. Yeah. I think Katie Hill considers the LA County part of her district to be comparatively, or especially the LA City part, to be the more liberal.
Right.
Part.
Yep.
So yeah, I think it's definitely possible that a Democrat could win that that election.
Some like young Northridge student would be like, you know.
We have one of those and he was a Republican, right?
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. There was a 19-year-old kid who I think is still in the run.
I think so.
I think he made it to the runoff. He was working at an ice cream shop.
Good for him.
There was a funny thing this week about the gas tax repeal campaign. There was a robocall apparently going around Los Angeles that the city clerk, is that who it was? The registrar.
This title is so long. It's like the county
recorder registrar.
Yeah, but is it city, county? It's county. County yeah. Recorder registrar.
Hyphen. Clerk.
Yes.
Dash.
Yes. Slash. The RR-CC,
yeah.
I think is what he's called. Dean Logan. He had to go on Twitter with a hashtag voter alert and say there's a robocall circulating that falsely claims that there is an error in the sample ballot.
Did anyone get this? Did you guys get this?
I
got the sample ballot. Yeah.
Did you get the robocall?
I did not get the robocall. I don't. What am I going to answer? unlisted number? Are you
this
insane?
Time of year, it's kind of fun.
These calls I get from Elk Grove like all day long.
I got a call from my own number the other day.
What? Your own number? Exactly.
Yeah.
And was it
I
you?
Answered it.
That I would probably answer. It's a robocall that was paid for by a campaign. It happens to be the Yes on 6 campaign.
Oh, surprise.
And the robocall, which is the repeal of the gas tax, we have talked about it many times on this show. The robocall said something to the effect of there's an error on the ballot. The ballot measure that is called Eliminate Certain Road Repair and Transportation Funding is supposed to be called the Gas Tax Repeal Initiative.
Oh, my God.
So this actually illuminated some stuff for me. I didn't know. So apparently what happened is they tried to get Prop 6 to be called the Gas Tax Repeal Initiative. And the state attorney general's office is allowed to rename.
If it's a political, if it's an endorsement to vote one way or another, or an enticement to vote one way or another.
Or it just seems unclear. They can just make a decision.
But they did change it to something that sounds way worse. They changed it from the Gas Tax Repeal Initiative to Eliminate Certain Road Repair and Transportation Funding.
Well, it sounds way worse for them.
For Prop 6.
Sounds better for me.
Oh, it's great for me, too.
Super psyched.
And it's great for, you know, the Attorney General Harvey Becerra is also a Democrat. I'm just saying, if I'm Carl DeMeo, the San Diego talk show host who was behind Prop 6, probably personally recorded this robocall, I would be upset about that name change. I think that would hurt my chances a lot.
There is always a lot of jostling about what these propositions are going to end up being called.
Yeah.
And the Secretary of State's office, I guess they have somebody who their official job is to make sure that the ballot measures are not anything too sexy. They de-sex the
yeah.
prop titles and make sure that it's as bureaucratic sounding as it can be. There was something similar for Measure M when that was on the ballot, where the opponents were trying to say that it should be called something that had to do with transit tax instead of being called like funds, sidewalk repair and street repair and transit and, you know, just a list of things.
Right.
Do you guys remember when Measure S did something like this? The robo, what this made me think of was the Measure S mailer, where they were sending fake eviction notices.
Oh my God.
To renters. Yes.
That was truly horrific.
Despicable.
They sent mail to people that with a big stamp that said, you, like, evicted.
Evicted.
And then you had to open it up. Yeah, eviction notice. And you had to open it. It looked like a real eviction notice, and you had to open up the thing, and it said, like, this is what is going to happen to you unless we
measure us.
You'll get a real one of these. Yeah. And of course, it went to a lot of people who are not fluent English speakers, yep. and I'm sure assume that they had actually been evicted.
Yep.
It was really, really bad. And now that those people are behind Prop 10, which we all support. So here we are. Speaking of props, we keep forgetting to finish Prop Lock and Drop It. I think we are just hanging on to this segment, but it is time to put it to bed. We have one more prop, and it is Prop 12. Alyssa, do you want to talk about Prop 12?
Since I work for a real estate blog, I think this is the most relevant to my expertise, because it deals with square footage for housing for animals.
Yes, that's right.
So,
chicken co-ops.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, animal welfare is important, especially in a state that's as progressive as California, and that has such a big part of its economy is derived from agriculture and you know, ranching and raising animals to eat them.
yes. The welfare of animals before we break their necks or drain their blood.
But this is basically just some pretty standard, if you're already buying animal products that have some certain cruelty-free indication, you probably are already paying for animals that are treated this way. But it would just have some basic sizes when it comes to the amount of space that certain animals can be kept in. And these are still kind of small, but it will give them a better life before we kill them and eat them.
So people that have been living in California for 8 years and voting here might remember that in 2008, we passed an extremely similar initiative to this one that said that pregnant pigs and veal calves and chickens had to be caged in such a way that they could stand up and turn around and spread their appendages fully and all this. And that passed. And who can believe it, but the agriculture industry tried to cut corners on these rules. They were defined very vaguely, like the wingspan of which chicken, like of, you know, the turning radius of which pregnant pig.
Oh, man.
It wasn't well defined. So now millions of more dollars are being spent to pass the exact same initiative again, except now they're putting numbers on it.
And why, again, are we voting for this? Why wasn't this taken care of? Like, why could
you
someone not
decide? You would think it would just
decide
be a layup in the legislature.
Yeah.
Right? There's so many animal rights people. Just
we
do it.
Shouldn't really be eating that many animals anyway, and we shouldn't really be using so much of our land to raise animals. We got this climate issue going on. Like, we need to be making some bigger, you know, taking some bigger and harder yes. looks at ourselves. But should we vote yes to give some more space to these creatures?
I'm going
to
vote sure.
Sure. Okay. Sure, so, but also try to cut back your own meat intake.
Yeah, quit beef.
People.
I would say basically just quit it altogether.
Honestly, the opposition to this one had me it was mostly people who have specific issues with the Humane Society as an
so the Humane Society is putting this proposition forward.
Yep. And it was like the Humane Society is parachuting into California politics
trying to tell us how to raise our chickens.
It is opposed by farmers and PETA.
Yep.
So, I don't know. At some point, you're just like, have we ever gotten anything?
Why would they oppose it? Because it doesn't go far enough? Or
PETA, I mean, you ask them. Like, I don't want to know
any more about this, but...
PETA, I believe it's because it sets in stone policies that they don't agree with about the size of these... cages, and
there should be no cages or something.
You know, like that kind of thing. I'm not sure if they also opposed in the one in 2008. I imagine so.
I guess I'm a slightly more enthusiastic than Hayes is. Sure, I will vote yes, comma, okay.
What are you gonna vote, Alyssa?
I'll vote yes, but I really want everyone to consider their choices, and so we don't have to have this problem maybe as much if we all cut back our meat intake, then maybe we won't need to house so many animals.
It's not going to fit on the ballot.
Pretty much everything is right in for me.
You have a little blue composition notebook that you glued in here.
Bringing my pen in with me. I'm just writing a little essay.
We did it.
Well, we've got more though, guys, because we've got some...
Well, we've got a voter guide coming.
We've got more, but we've got more county and city things to kind of briefly talk about.
We prop lock and dropped it, but the really important ones we are going to talk about more on this show and in our voter guide, which is coming out. It's going to cover way too much of the ballot. Every congressional election, every state senator and an assembly member election, all the judges. More than you could have ever possibly desired. So look forward to that and to our next episode of LA Podcast. Bye.